My name is Willie, and I am an alcoholic. I know all of you that have children have had your kids go through the stage of, you know, coming home from school and telling you the joke they'd heard that day. My son came in when he was going through that stage, and he said, "Mama, do you know what this is?" And, of course, trying to be the brilliant mother, you know, I stood there a few minutes trying to figure it out. And I said, "No, honey, I don't know what it is." He said, "Well, I don't either, but here it comes back." So I was up here this morning, and here I come back. Met a man out there, and I was on my way in, said something about, "Well, I'm about to wrap up." And he said, "My Lord, are you on again?" I said, "Yeah, I'm on again." One of my favorite steps is step 10. It really is. The principle behind our step 10 is perseverance. To keep on keeping on. Perseverance. And sort of a little side capsule I have written in my book. I have no idea what beautiful person handed it to me, but somebody did, and they said, you know, behind step 10, there's a simple phrase, too. And it goes, not what's right, or who's right, excuse me, what, not who's right, but what's right. And that helped me because I wrote it down beside the perseverance. Because the last part of that step, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That does boil down to not who's right, but what's right. And that's sort of the way we learn how to live, isn't it? Step 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Every word, important. And as I've told you all that have been here before, I'm a word circler. And I have the word circled in my step itself. The one I picked out was promptly, because that's the one I neglected the most when I first started trying to put this step into my life. Promptly. As we worked the first 9 steps, and I'll be using the 12 and 12, as we worked the first 9 steps, we prepare ourselves for the adventure of a new life. But when we approach step 10, we commence to put our AA way of living to practical use, day by day, in fair weather, I have that one circled, or foul, circle. Then comes the acid test. Can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance, and live to good purpose under all conditions? There's another one of those that we want to put after it. What an order. I can't go through with it. Except when you backtrack and look at the day by day. And almost all of us, at this point in time, we could stand on our head if that's what it took, for as long as it took, to stay sober. So sure, it's an order to stay sober, number one, to keep an emotional balance. Dear God, that's all what we all want. And to live to good purpose, not only in the good times, but under all conditions. And we're going to have some conditions. God bless you new people that are just 15 seconds sober. Bless your heart. Because all conditions are going to be there when you get out of this seminar and you get back out there in the battlefield. We can't promise you that all conditions are going to be good. Some of them are going to be foul and some of them are going to be fair. But we stay sober through these by doing it on a daily basis. And step 10 is what gives us the concrete, practical idea of a daily way to live. A continuous look at our assets and our liabilities, and a real desire to learn and grow by this means are necessities for us. We alcoholics have learned this the hard way. Oh, haven't we? More experienced people, of course, in all times and places have practiced unsparing self-survey and criticism. For the wise have always known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit. Not just when we're getting out of a scrape. That's what we were used to. Oh, didn't we do a lot of self-searching the next morning? Coming out of a fog, coming out of a hangover, coming out of a blackout. My soul got so sore, tired of being searched. It almost, you know, put his hands over its head or lean up against the wall, spread your legs. Soul-searching time for Willie. But it only happened when things got going real bad. But this is giving us the idea that people for centuries have been doing this, have been living on this daily basis, and have been looking at themselves daily to see how their behavior shaped up. To make it a regular habit until he is able to admit and accept what he finds. And I wanted always to accept and admit what I wanted to find. It wasn't always there. Willie hadn't always been a good girl. And I hated to accept what I found, so I would change it around till it got where it suited me. Until he patiently, the wise man does, and persistently tries to correct what's wrong. I was in such a habit of not admitting that anything was wrong. I walked into meetings for the first 4 or 5 years, and people would say, "How are you?" "Fine, fine, just fine, just fine." As the meeting went on, I'd start the griping and carrying on, if not allowed to myself. But I wanted you to think I was all right. And I was missing the whole idea in that if I don't know when there's wrong going on in my life, when I don't know and recognize the foul weather for what it is, if it's pouring down rain out here and I run outside and stand there in the pouring down rain and don't know why I'm getting wet, I'm not quite all here. I've got to realize the state of conditions before I can realize what I'm going to do and what I have to do. Step 10 has taught me to look at those conditions as they are. Then I know where to go with them. When a drunk has a terrific hangover because he drank heavily yesterday, he cannot live well today. But there's another kind of a hangover, which we all experience whether we are drinking or not. That is an emotional hangover. The direct result of yesterday and sometimes today's excesses of negative emotion, anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. If we would live serenely today and tomorrow, we certainly need to eliminate these hangovers. Dry drunks. Dry drunks are nothing more than emotional dryness. This doesn't mean that we need to wander morbidly around in the past. It requires an admission and correction of errors now to what's going on right now. Charlie and Joe emphasize that when they are going through the book, that we need to look at now. We have our step 4 and our 5, our 6 and our 7 behind us. Now we're going to be dealing with how is Willie behaving today. Not how did she behave a long time ago. Even how did she behave 3 years ago. I have to deal with what I'm doing right now. And how well this emotional balance that I want to keep is weighing on that scale. Although all inventories are alike in principle, the time factor does distinguish one from another. All of the inventories that we take, they're alike in principle, but they are different. And on this one, we have... They're divided into sections. And if you go along with me in the 12 and 12, you'll see this. The time factor does distinguish one from another. Number one, there's the spot check inventory, taken at any time of the day, whenever we find ourselves getting tangled up. That's the first kind of inventory, on a daily basis. When we feel ourselves getting restless, irritable, discontent, that's when we take our spot check. Hey, wait a minute. What am I doing here? What am I all hyper about? What am I slightly off key about? How am I getting tangled up here? And do it right then. Don't wait till it goes on and on and on, they told me. But when I feel that restlessness and that irritability start working up, stop it right there and say, wait a minute, Willie, what are you doing? That's the spot check. Then there's the one we take it days in when we review the happenings of the hours just passed. That's number two. At the day's end, we take that second one. Here we cast up a balance sheet, crediting ourselves with things well done and chalking up debits where due. I know a lot of people do not go along, and I have no quarrel with them, hardly. I know that they say when we take our inventories and everything that there's nothing that belongs over there on the credit side. But see, my 12 and 12 here tells me about this inventory that we do in step 10. That we need, as human beings, we need to credit ourselves with things well done. That helps to form the habit to do it more. If we can think to ourselves, you know, the fact that I just stopped and talked to that gal today, even though I didn't want to waste the time, I didn't have the time, but I did stop and talk to her, and it made her feel a little bit better. She acted as though she felt a little bit better. I need to give myself credit for that. The fact that I took off time, if I was in the middle of something at home and someone's name popped in my head and I thought, well, I believe I'll give her a call and see how her day's going. I need to put that down. Because when I put it down at the end of my day, it helps me to realize that, okay, Willie, you need to recognize the good that you're doing. The good for you. It may not have done either one of these gals as much good as it did me to take the time with another human being. But I want to put that down so that it will become a regular habit in my life to take every opportunity that I possibly can to be or to talk or to share or to just howdy, just sometime a howdy to another human being. So I don't have to just put down all the things at the end of the day that I fouled up on. I need to put down those things that I did well so that maybe that will encourage me. You know, every signal you send to your brain remains there. It's there. Every thought that gets into your brain, it stays there. It doesn't go anyplace. It's there for the rest of your life. And you think, well, then why can't I remember it? That's your problem. That's not your brain's problem. Because it's there. Hypnosis has proven that it'll call it back. When it gets you out of the way, it'll call it back because it's still there. So every good signal that I can send to my brain is gonna be there for the rest of my life. And if I can say to myself, okay, well, that was a good thing you did today, then my brain will get used to the word good or just the word kind, considerate. And it will begin to be an automatic thing that I give back away the next day. But in this second inventory that we take at the day's end, we put the balance sheet, things well done, and chalking up debits where due. Number three, then there are those occasions when alone or in the company of our sponsor or our spiritual advisor, We make a careful review of our progress since the last time. Many AAs go in for annual or semi-annual house cleanings. Doesn't say a whole new inventory. Just a house cleaning. Lots of stuff goes on in a year in most of our lives, the way we live nowadays. Like we're on a treadmill. I feel like sometime, you know, I just want to holler like my dad used to holler at the old mule. Whoa! Just slow down. But most of us live like that because that's the kind of world we're living in. We get up in the morning and it's like we were shot out of a cannon. The way we go. And a lot of things can go on in a year. A lot of things that we need to sort of review and think about. Did we handle them well? If we didn't, no big deal. We can't go back and unhandle them. But we can learn from thinking about that was a situation I could have handled a little bit better. Instead of really being so determined that somebody see my point of view, and God bless him, it's mainly my husband when I'm trying to convince him of my point of view, because he just doesn't seem to understand when I'm trying to explain something very simple to him. But could I, you know, God gives us women some special gifts. Now, I'm not getting into Charlie's sex department. I'll let Charlie take care of that. But I mean, he gives us some special little conning games that we can run on our fellas and shoot, y'all enjoy them. And couldn't I have handled that instead of storming around and doing it in a hateful way? Couldn't I have accomplished the same way if I would have used my God-given powers a little bit better? A semi-annual or an annual update is good for all of us. I don't care whether you've been sober 15 minutes or 150 years. It doesn't make any difference. Because of this fast pace we live in. And it doesn't hurt to stop and update every once in a while. And that does not mean, it's been made clear to me, that I need to go back semi-annually or annually and take another inventory. It says here, and I love the way it, being a woman, I like the word, house cleaning. Just to look back and see what I could have handled better and what I handled well. That's important too. That's the only way I know I'm making progress. By looking at both of it. Because even the fact that I can go back and recognize what I didn't handle well shows I'm making progress. Back in my drinking years, who cared? Who cared? Who cared how many, you know, bodies were strewn? Many of us also like the experience of an occasional retreat from the outside world where we can quiet down for an undisturbed day or so of self-overhaul and meditation. Just to retreat a little while, whether we have a special retreat, an organized type thing that we go to, or whether we take our fishing poles and go down to our favorite stream and sit there on the bank, not really worth caring whether we catch any of them crab or not. But just sit there. And this is good, and I think particularly for those of us that are living now. Young, middle-aged, old, it doesn't make any difference. Pull out. J.R. Ewing, and I don't have to give his real name, I can just say J.R. And I know some of you that have read the story of his life. On Sundays, he does not talk to anyone, and he doesn't allow anyone to talk to him. And that isn't his J.R. character. He's been doing it for years. I hate to say we didn't teach him that down in Texas. He learned it all by himself. But he knew in the fast-paced world, he goes to say in his biography, autobiography, that he needed to pull away and to not hear the sound of his own voice for a whole day and to not listen to the sound of anybody else's voice for a whole day. Of course, this is done in a practical way. If there's an emergency, then he said that's different. But every opportunity he has on Sunday, he declares his day of peace and quiet. And I've sort of picked that up. I don't necessarily have to do it on Sunday, being as I don't work all the time. I can do it any time I want to. And I get scolded for taking my phone off the hook once in a while. I get scolded for unplugging that sucker, but I do it. Because I need that little retreat. And I just call that being good to Willie Day. And not only being good to myself, but to sort of clear the cobwebs. Just a little retreat to quiet down, slow down, have some time. Over further in the 12 and 12, it says, before we ask what a spot check inventory, what is a spot check inventory, let's look at the kind of setting in which such an inventory can do its work. It's a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. Now, I didn't understand that when I first read it. If somebody disturbed me, how could there be something wrong with me? But it goes on to say, if somebody hurts us and we're sore, we're in the wrong also. But are there no exceptions to this rule? What about justifiable anger? If somebody cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad about it? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folks? For us of AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. Few people have been more victimized by resentments. And again, Joe and Charlie do a good job of telling us what resentments are going to do to us. But there are other kinds of disturbances. Jealousy, envy, self-pity, and hurt pride. Those are four other killers, too. That resentment heads the list. But think about those for a minute. Jealousy in any form, envy in any form, self-pity in any form, and hurt pride. A spot check inventory taken in the midst of such disturbances can be a very great help in quieting stormy emotions. Today's spot check finds its chief application to situations which arise in each day's march. The consideration of long-standing difficulty had better be postponed, when possible, to times deliberately set aside for that purpose. The quick inventory is aimed at our daily ups and downs, especially those where people or new events throw us off balance and tempt us to make mistakes. Somebody new comes storming into our life. Some new circumstance comes storming into our life. This is when our spot check is even more important. Then we can see, well, wait a minute. I'm tackling a new situation here. I have someone new in my orbit. And I'm going to take my time. I'm going to back myself up here. And I'm going to sit down and I'm going to think about this for a few minutes. I'm not going to just let this new thing come into my life and not pay it any mind. Because all of us are pretty set in our ways, whether we're 18, 20, or 97. We do have that sort of streak in us that we don't like change. And we are going to react to change of any kind. So if a change comes into your life, make that spot check a little bit more carefully. And see now, how is this change going to affect me? In all these situations, we need four things. It tells us we need only four things. That's not a big, long list of requirements. It said we need self-restraint, which doesn't come easy for us. We need honest analysis of what is involved. Now, just what is this situation? When I look at it honestly, just what is it? Is it something for me really to be afraid of? Is this person really threatening me in any way? Am I really afraid that he's going to get my job? And if I am, why am I afraid am I not doing the job well enough to suit me? Or well enough to suit the boss? To really honestly look at the situation and put it down for what it is. I'm a little scared because I've been goofing off lately. If that's the honest appraisal. Number three, a willingness to admit when the fault is ours. No, that's a bitter pill to swallow sometime, but you know, the more you swallow it, the easier it gets. At least a love to watch the Fonz and Archie Bunker both try to say they were wrong about something. You know, you remember it wouldn't come out? They'd say, we're rock, 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 and that's as far as they could get. And that's just about the stage I was in a long period of my life. I just simply couldn't say those three words. I was wrong. But you know, the more you say it, the less important it gets as far as being a killer. After all, it's just three words. You're not admitting that, you know, that you're a complete failure in life or anything else. You're just wrong. Number four, an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere. Sure, we're going to be done in by people and circumstances, places, things. Sure we are. We can't get out there and mix it up if we decide to, you know, be hermits and go up and live in a cave someplace, then nobody going to bother us. But that's not what most of us can do. We're out there on the battleground. We're not even in the protected type atmosphere that we've been in this weekend. When we get on airplanes and in cars and hitchhiking in every way we're going to get home, we're going to enter the battlefield Monday morning. And that's where our admitting that we're wrong, when we brush up against these masses that we're fooling with, and the beginning of understanding that, okay, we're going to be done in every once in a while. One of these masses going to get to us. But to be willing to say, okay, maybe they didn't mean to do it. And maybe if they did, maybe they're a little sick. So I'll wish them well. This is the one little clue that I picked up along the way, and I don't know where. Because, I mean, I know it was in Alcoholics Anonymous. But that whenever I became too put out and too upset with someone, that the best remedy I could find was just to be to say to myself, I wish them well, and mean it with all my heart. I don't know, I have never known whether it did them any good or not. I don't know whether the well ever came to them or not, but it came to me. That took the venom out of it. I don't like what they did to me. I guess I haven't reached that perfection yet to say I like what they did to me. I don't believe I'll ever make it. I'm sitting here looking at sister. No, sister, I don't think I'll ever make it. But I can say to myself, I wish them well. Because by doing that, I'm wishing and hoping that they don't do it to somebody else. So once again, then I'm being of some small service to my fellow man. Our first objective will be the development of self-restraint. It said that's one of the first requirements. Self-restraint. This carries a top priority rating. And you know how much we think about top priority ratings nowadays. Everything's rated from 1 to 10. We rate everything. So when they say it's top priority, they mean it's a 10. When we speak or act hastily or rashly, the ability to be fair-minded and tolerant evaporates on the spot. Oh, how hard it was for me to learn to shut my mouth and not say what my tongue wanted to say. I sort of delighted in the fact that I had the reputation among my peers that I could cut you up and spit you out with my tongue. I sort of gloried in that. That look out, you know, people would warn, don't cross Willie because she'll really get you told off in nothing flat. And I realized that this was an area that I was going to have to work on, to shut up. When someone had done something, when someone said something, or I felt compelled to change their direction in life, that was what I was going to have to do, as I said this morning, the biting of the tongue. Because the minute I open my mouth and start blasting somebody, I cannot be fair-minded and I cannot be tolerant. And these are the two things that I strive for. One unkind tirade or one willful snap judgment can ruin our relationship with another person for a whole day, or maybe a whole year, and I might add, a lifetime. You know, friends are valuable, valuable, valuable things. I don't care how much money we could take up and collectively put all the money that each one of us have, all of it, not in our pockets, but in our bank accounts and our savings accounts and our CDs and all of the junk places where we have it hidden from the IRS and all the things. We could collectively put all the money that we all have, and it wouldn't buy one friend for any one of us. And yet, how thoughtless we can be sometime with our friends, when it's such a valuable commodity. How thoughtless we are with the people whom we share our lives with, our husbands, our wives, our mothers, our fathers. One unkind utterance can undo, can hurt a relationship, because the spoken word, you know, people can forgive you for it, but there's no way they can forget it because of that brain mechanism we were talking about a while ago. It's there always. Nothing pays off like restraint of tongue and pen. And we've certainly all of us learned this the hard way, too. Don't write anything down that you don't want to have thrown back at you later. Not only will AA tell you that, but a good lawyer will tell you that. We must avoid quick-tempered criticism and furious, power-driven arguments. The having to be right. The same goes for sulking and silent scorn. Oh, how many days did I punish that man of mine in silent scorn. And when I found an easier, softer way to do that same thing, it was so much more fun. Silent scorn and the harm we can do with sulking. See, everything that we need to check up at night are not the real biggies that we've done during the day, but little things like this that we actually take away from another human being's happiness. And do we have that right? Do we have that right? These are emotional booby traps baited with pride and vengefulness. Our first job is to sidestep these traps. When we are tempted by the bait, we should train ourselves to step back and think. And that's a habit we have to get back into, too, isn't it? Thinking. For we can neither think nor act to good purpose until the habit of self-restraint has become automatic, where we just automatically recoil as though from a hot flame. In the following couple of paragraphs, it tells you that we need also to watch out just as much when we're having good times. When times get too good for us, these are times that are hurtful for us too. When temporary good fortune came our way, we indulged ourselves in fantasies of still greater victories over people and circumstances. Thus blinded by prideful self-confidence, we were apt to play the big shot. Of course, people turned away from us hurt or bored or hurt. Now that we're in AA and sober and winning back the esteem of our friends and business associates, we find that we still need to exercise special vigilance. As an insurance against big shotism, we can often check ourselves by remembering that we are today sober only by the grace of God, and that our that any success we may have be having is far more His success than ours. That'll take you off your big shot podium real quick, to know that I didn't really do this. God did it. Finally, we begin to see that all people, including ourselves, are to some extent emotionally ill, as well as frequently wrong. A lot of those folks out there aren't real well. And that's something we need to take into account. They're not all emotionally stable. I think we get the idea sometime that we have a market on emotional illness. No, we don't either. There are a lot of folks out there, a lot of folks that live within our little special orbits that have problems of their own. I often told kids in school when they'd come to me telling me how unfair, how unjust, how unthinking, not non-understanding that their parents were. My father doesn't understand me. And I remember so often saying to them, look, if you can take into consideration just for a few minutes that your parents have a whole set of problems all their own, you're not the only problem they have. There's two grown adults out there. They have a mutual set of problems in a marriage and being your parent. That's one of their first problems. But they also then have problems each of their own. So sometimes maybe they can't give you the understanding that you need or that you think you so justly deserve just by being their child. But they cannot at that time step out of their own emotional bog long enough to help you. So I have tried in my own way to not judge people. I don't think we're ever free of judgment. We all make judgments. But to stop after I have made that too quick judgment on someone and remember that they have a whole set of problems that I don't know anything about. I don't know what happened to them in the earlier part of the day. I don't know what made them treat me like they did. But something might have happened, but of great importance that I don't know anything about. So I try to give them that much room because of the book's suggestion. Then we approach true tolerance and see what real love for our fellow man actually means. It will become more and more evident as we go forward that it is pointless to become angry or to get hurt by people who, like us, are suffering from the pains of growing up or suffering from the pains of just coping. It's a word I don't understand, but it's being used a lot nowadays. Coping. But everybody's trying to cope. There's whole books being written about cope. And to me, you know, just to breathe and getting through the day in this day and time, if you can make it till bedtime, you're coping. You're doing fine without committing mayhem. Such a radical change in our outlook will take time, maybe a lot of time. Not many people can truthfully assert that they love everybody. Not many people can truthfully assert that they love everybody. Don't feel like you're falling short on this program if every once in a while you find we run into a dude that you don't particularly care for. You're not being untrue to your AA principles. At least the book says here that you're not. Sure, you're not going to love everybody. Most of us must admit that we have loved but a few. That we have been quite indifferent to the many so long as none of them gave us trouble. And as for the remainder, well, we have really disliked or hated them. Although these attitudes are common enough, we AAs find that we need something much better in order to keep our balance. We can't afford that deep hate, and we can't afford to let it go beyond just, okay, that person I don't care for as much as I do, this one. That's as far as you need to go. It'll hurt you less. I have found that it hurts me a lot less to just say I just don't care for that person quite as much as I do a lot of my other acquaintances. Then I don't have to worry about it anymore. Then they don't take on primary importance in my life. But if I give them all the hate that I can muster up, man, they become important. Then I have taken this person that I don't like, don't want any part of, and made him of primary importance in my life. We can't stand it if we hate deeply. The idea that we can be possessively loving of a few, can ignore the many, and can continue to fear or hate anybody has to be abandoned, if only a little at a time. Doesn't our program, it doesn't demand of us the impossible like I thought it did. We can try to stop making unreasonable demands upon those we love. And Lord, haven't we been, I don't know, I guess I shouldn't say we. I have made unreasonable demands upon the people that I love. I know it used to just drive my husband plumb up his banana tree. He would tell me when we first not when we first married, because I wasn't quite that crazy when we first married. But he would tell me, or even today, and I have to, you know, draw back every once in a while because I fall back into the same pattern. He would just be passing through the room, you know, and stop for a few minutes and give me a little pat and say, I love you. And I'd say, why? How do you love me? How much do you love me? I always put demands on him that he give me more. Just the simple statement of, I love you. Why did he have to have a reason? But I would take the fineness of the moment and ruin it by saying, you know, how much? I know none of you men have ever been asked that now. I know that I'm the only woman that ever did that. Or I love you more than you love me. That got him. We can show kindness where we have shown none. With those we dislike, we can begin to practice justice and courtesy. Just being courteous to people we dislike. Ooh, that's good mental exercise. Perhaps going out of our way to understand and to help them. When those opportunities present themselves, we take advantage of them. Whenever we fail any of these people, we can promptly admit it to ourselves always and to them also. And when the admission would be helpful. Courtesy, kindness, justice, and love. We've talked about cornerstones and keystones, and our book uses that phrase here. Courtesy, kindness, justice, and love are the keynotes by which we may come into harmony with practically anybody. Look at those form requirements. Are any of them so terribly hard? Courtesy, kindness, justice, and love. They're not asking us to scale Mount Everest. None of them take any physical stamina. That's a small requirement when the promise is so much that we can come into harmony with practically anybody. When in doubt, we can always pause and say, not my will, but thine be done. And we can often ask ourselves, am I doing to others as I would have them do to me today? I know that with this step,
It gave me the courage by practicing it and practicing it and practicing it, checking up daily, doing my spot checks, doing my retreat type checks, to the point where I could say to myself at night, when I said my nightly gratitude prayer, that I could say to myself, God, please let everybody treat me tomorrow as I have treated them today. When we can say that to ourselves, we're getting well. Because not only am I asking God to look over what I have done, I'm asking him to let me be treated that following day the way I treated everybody else. If I gave somebody some bumps, let me have them tomorrow. If I passed on some kindnesses, let me have that tomorrow. But let me take tomorrow what I dished out today. And I came to that point after thoroughly studying and looking and talking to people that knew a lot more about this program than I'll ever know, that I have the courage to pray that prayer now. Sometimes it's hard because I hate to anticipate getting back what I dished out. But see, that polishes up on the courage a little bit. And it also makes me a little bit more careful because, see, I'm going to pray that same prayer that night. So it makes me a little more cautious about how I do treat people. When evening comes, perhaps just before going to sleep, many of us draw up a balance sheet for the day. This is a good place to remember that inventory taking is not always done in red ink. It's a poor day indeed when we haven't done something right. As a matter of fact, the waking hours are usually well filled with things that are constructive. Good intentions, even if you didn't carry them out. Many times good intentions can't be carried out, but just the fact that you had them is going to make you a better person. Good intentions, good thoughts, and good acts are there for us to see. Even when we have tried hard and failed, we may chalk that up as one of the greatest credits of all. If my good intentions didn't turn out like I wanted them to, or like, you know, I had anticipated, I had them. So I can chalk that up. Under these conditions, the pains of failure are converted into assets. We hear that old phrase, to grow, you know, you have to have pain. And I think this little explanation right here is good. The pains of failure are converted into assets. Out of them, we receive the stimulation we need to go forward. And of course, on these steps, we're going forward. Someone who knew what he was talking about once remarked that pain was the touchstone of all spiritual progress. How heartily we AAs can agree with him, for we know that the pains of drinking had to come before sobriety, and emotional turmoil before serenity. As we glance down the debit side of the day's ledger, we should carefully examine our motives in each thought or act that appears to be wrong. Not just the glaring ones that jump out at us, but if it fears, if it's a little bit, then we need to look at it. In most cases, our motives won't be hard to see and understand. When prideful, angry, jealous, anxious, or fearful, we acted accordingly. And that was that. Here we need only recognize that we did act or think badly. Try to visualize how we might have done better and resolve with God's help to carry these lessons over into tomorrow, making, of course, any amends still neglected. We constructively criticized someone who needed it. And I know any of y'all haven't ever done that. When our real motive was to win a useless argument, or the person concerned not being present, we thought we were helping others to understand him. When we in actuality, our true motive was to feel superior by pulling him down. We sometimes hurt those we love because they need to be taught a lesson. that old teaching, when we really want to punish. We were depressed and complained we felt bad, when in fact we were mainly asking for sympathy and attention. This odd trait of mind and emotion, this perverse wish to hide a bad motive underneath a good one, permeates human affairs from top to bottom. This subtle and elusive, there's our mask again. If these things just hit us the way they were, we wouldn't have so much problem with them. But this subtle and elusive kind of self-righteousness can underlie the smallest act or thought. Learning daily to spot, admit, and correct. Three little words. To spot, to admit, and to correct these flaws is the essence of character building and good living. And you know, you can't help but know that the product of good living is good feeling. And it's telling us that daily, if we act, admit, and correct, an honest regret for harm done, a genuine gratitude for blessings received, and a willingness to try for better things tomorrow will be the permanent assets we shall seek. Having so considered our day, not omitting to take due note of things well done, and having searched our hearts with neither fear nor favor, we can truly thank God for the blessings that we have received and sleep in good conscience. See, step 10 does not ask for a raking over of the coals of the past, but just to continue to look at that daily battle that we fight. And every day, in every way, is a battle of some sort. To look at it, see what we did well, see what we meant to do well and didn't quite make it, but the intentions were there, therefore that's a credit. To try to undo anything that we did that should be undone, to make any amends that we possibly can, and do it. Not I'll do it the next time I happen to see him in the grocery store. No, promptly admit it and then do something about it if you possibly can, if it's within your good judgment. You know, after practicing and trying to do what it said in this book about continuing to take this personal inventory, and when I was wrong, promptly admitted it, I discovered something in this program that had eluded me up to this point. Because I think it was here where I learned the value and the real sense behind living one day at a time, starting that day fresh and ending it up. Having a beginning and an end to the days. That I learned what this daily program of living was really all about. It was when I had practiced this over and over, and it began to become a part of me, like a comfortable pair of shoes. Not to perfection. But just to be a comfortable part of me. That's when I think the time was that I added my third A to my program. See, I had admitted in those first steps that my life was unmanageable, that I had a problem with booze, that I was trying to direct my own life. I admitted a lot of things. And then I accepted them in step 3 when I decided to have a new manager and to let somebody else guide my life. And then cleaned up the debris of the past. So I had admitted my alcoholism and my unmanageable life. I had accepted it. But there was still something that I didn't have, that I could see other people had it and I didn't have it. And I found out it was that other A that there was one more besides admitting and accepting. And for me, it was approval. I had to approve of where I was. I had to approve of my alcoholism. I had to approve of the answer that God gave me for my alcoholism and all of the offshoots thereof. You know, in the third edition of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 449, it says, nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. And the moment I began to approve of my alcoholism and say, okay, that's all right, that's good, then I added my third A to my program. And I know there's some younger members sitting out there that there's no reason why you should know what I'm talking about. There's no reason at all you should know that. But one of these days, I promise you, you will. If you stay around this program and try to put it into your life, you're going to know what I mean. Approving of my alcoholism is not the same as saying I'm glad I'm an alcoholic. No, I can approve of what God did because God doesn't do anything by mistake. And look what I have gotten that I would not have gotten otherwise. Most people can number the people that they're close to on one hand. I wouldn't trade the relationship that I have with these two girls here that I have here from my hometown. I love these two women very deeply. I have a relationship with both of them that I prize above many, many things that people spend money for all the time. I wouldn't trade knowing Joe over there for anything in this God's world. So many of you that have come to mean so much to me during these seminars. There's Pinky. And I love Pinky. He's meant a great deal to me. So many of you people have meant a great deal to me. This didn't just happen by mistake. But I couldn't have this relationship with people. This non-fearing, non-demanding relationship that I have with many, many people. The feeling that's in this room, I don't know who else experiences feelings like this. I really don't. We all have been to hell and we know what it's like. And we're all getting well and seeing what it's like. So I am glad to put that other A on my program. I admitted, I accepted, and man, I now approve. Thank you so much for this afternoon.